Hey everybody, welcome to the ninth edition of the Unsolicited Advice Podcast.
Yes, well done. Coming up on number 10, I'm J.R. Bennett.
And I am Ryan Witkowski. Good to be back again. Welcome to the show. So we're just going to keep true to form like we did last time, and we're going to talk about some recent event type things. And of course, the most important part of the show is the unsolicited advice.
There'll be no shortage of unsolicited advice.
There's not going to be. So who wants to kick it off today? You want to kick it off?
Well, yeah, sure. Since, I mean, I found an article. It's not necessarily a recent event, but I found an article that talked about some stuff that was relevant to last week's thing. Last week, we were talking about Facebook and struggling to find, you know, what we like about Facebook, I guess, and we found a bunch of things that were wrong with Facebook and how people use Facebook. But so I came across this article that talks about how Facebook is used by people who are in their addiction, like a substance use addiction and recovery. And so anyway, this lady, Stephanie Stark, wrote an article in The Atlantic about a town called Perry, Ohio.
I know Perry. That's by Toledo.
It's by where?
Toledo, Ohio.
Really?
Which is south of Detroit, Michigan.
Have you been to Perry before?
I have, actually. When I was in the Boy Scouts, we went to Perry. There used to be an old military Navy installation or Coast Guard installation there.
Okay.
Yeah, it's also a power plant, nuclear power plant there. Anyway.
Interesting. Is it, so sure. It's right on the big, what do you call it, the Great Lake?
The Great Lakes, yes.
Yeah.
The
Lake Erie. Which lake is it connected
One of the Great Lakes, Lake Erie.
Lake Erie. So, yeah. What'd you think of that town? I'm curious.
It was a long time ago. It was, I mean, it's a rural town. It's probably middle class, lower middle class, working class neighborhood.
Okay.
Very, very Midwestern. Very, very, very Midwestern.
Okay. So, apparently in Perry, Ohio, there's a bit of an epidemic with heroin use. This article describes it the same way. It says it's an upper middle class suburb, about 30 minutes east of Cleveland. Anyway, she talks about how there's a lot of people in Perry, Ohio using addiction, how a lot of people move away from Perry, Ohio to go pursue careers and stuff like that, and they often forget about what they've left behind and the epidemic that's kind of ravaging the community with the heroin use and everything, and how she sees it reflected in how people use their Facebook pages. So she sees people from her hometown that are, you know, all of a sudden not really posting anything about themselves or whatever. It's she starts to wonder if there's, you know, if that's a sign of their addiction, if they're, you know, maybe they're deep in an addiction and they're more ashamed to post things about themselves, so they don't have that many great things to post about themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't just get a new job, or they're in their, them and their girlfriend didn't just go to Europe or something like that.
So she's researching this or just noticing this is happening?
This is kind of anecdotal for her experience.
Okay.
You know what I mean? But I think that it rings true to, you know, kind of that, you know, the behavior of somebody who's deep in an addiction. I mean, there's a lot of shame that goes along to being, you know, deep in, like, heavy in your substance use. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's, people think that you're not going to understand what's going on with them, that they're going to be judged for it. They want to hide it, and that shame kind of feeds on the use and, mm-hmm. and all that.
So what did she find with Facebook? They were posting more or they were posting less?
Well, there's a guy, Richard Foster, the executive president of treatment program Gateway Rehabilitation Center in Pennsylvania, talked about how not talking to family and friends and not posting on social media is like right in line with the behavior of somebody who's deep in their addiction, how, you know, with that shame and everything. So, and also, you know, when somebody starts to get into recovery, they are actually tend to be more honest in their posts and more, like, real about what they post. They talk about how difficult, you know, their recovery is and everything.
Okay.
And they use it as a source of support, you know, which is different than the way a lot of other people do. They use it as like a way to brag to the world, kind of.
Overcompensation, sort of the opposite of what we talked about last week or a couple weeks ago.
Totally, yeah. They use it in a real way, a way that I thought you would like.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. It's the flip side of the coin that there is. I think we sort of painted social media as being the ultimate evil, but I think that there, you know, obviously there's something valuable in there.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
But like anything that's good, you can always exploit it and make it, you know, make it bad. But that's good. So what drew you to that story?
What's that?
What drew you to that story?
Well, the fact that we were just talking about Facebook, and you have, you know, a wealth of knowledge on the subject of addiction, substance use, and you're from Ohio.
So, I am, and I can actually validate the heroin problem up there.
Yeah.
There was the record number of deaths just last, I think, 2013. I don't know when the article is from that we're referencing right now, but there was a huge heroin problem. They had more heroin deaths than they've ever had recorded there.
Really?
Yeah, so I don't know what was going on, but that's, you know, it's definitely the case.
Is it really inexpensive? I mean...
Is heroin inexpensive?
Yeah.
I mean, what I can remember is that heroin is probably $20 a bag, so you want to get high once, it's $20.
Okay, just one time...
But then there's also people who were used super heavy heroin users who are using three bags at a time. So that's $60 a pop.
So if you buy $20 worth, that's only going to last you like a couple hours or something? Or
yeah, I mean, probably a couple hours. I mean, yeah. It really depends on how much you're using. I mean, if you're like a casual heroin user, I don't know.
Right. Anybody's doing just the weekend warrior.
Well, actually, it's interesting. I was reading this. There's this guy who works for the National Institute of Health, or this black dude. He's got dreadlocks, but he's a doctor of addiction studies or something like that. And he was talking about how many people there are who do drugs like heroin and things like that on a recreational basis. Yeah, like they're able to do that. They're able to do heroin, and they live a life. It's just something they do recreationally.
Yeah.
Like people in the day used to smoke opium recreationally, you know, I don't know.
Well, if there are those people, I don't know them. Or they are hiding from me.
I don't know anybody who does that stuff recreationally.
I don't know anybody who does it recreationally, yeah. Well, not a hard drug like that.
The thing
that.
Is, do you know anybody who's doing heroin on a regular basis?
I had a friend, I mean, we fell out of touch because he was doing hard opiates on a regular basis. He was using pills, but it's an opiate. I don't know. And this stuff was pretty hardcore from what I understand, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, we kind of went our own directions in life.
You tend to lose some friends when you get down that road every once in a while.
Your interests are different.
Your priorities pretty much change completely.
So I don't really know anybody now.
Yeah, that was interesting. I forgot where we were going with that, but
we were just talking about how you kind of are familiar with the heroin problem.
Oh, you asked me how much it costs. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's what I was wondering. Like, how does it become such a pervasive problem in an area? And I don't know. I have no idea. But
I mean, so when you say how does it become such a problem in a single area, is it? I mean, where are drugs usually found the most, which is, we had said that it was in a poor working class neighborhood like Perry. I'm sure if you looked up demos of Perry, it would be just your very, probably 50, below the 50 percentile in income and things like that, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm.
Usually drugs are more popular in lower socioeconomic areas.
The town has a median income of $1,500. Wait, the town of 1500 has a median income of $31,000
per household.
Yeah,
that's very low. That's
right.
For Ohio, that's $15,000. I mean, that's you're making like $12-$15 an hour. So it's a very working class neighborhood, right? There's not a lot of high profile jobs, and that's where drugs usually in inner cities or even in like crystal meth. Where is crystal meth most popular?
In the Midwest, or like low income,
like rural areas.
Yeah.
You think trailer parks. You think, you know, biker meth, like, you know, middle of the country type of thing.
Right.
So I think I don't know how that happens actually. I don't know if it's more publicized because I know there's also a lot of really well to do people who are definitely experiencing the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. Definitely. I don't know what
but
it
also
is.
Also, what's more prevalent when people have less money? What else is more prevalent in family life cycles? when or generational cycles, what's more prevalent in when people don't have a lot of money or less resources?
Well, like alcoholism.
Alcoholism, domestic violence.
Birth rates are higher.
Higher birth rates, trauma, things happening like that.
Right, abuse.
Abuse.
Right.
So that's probably that cycle just drives. And when and then if you get a big supply of a product from...
That's the thing. That's what I was wondering. Yeah, there must be like some kind of like, somehow the supply chain ends in Perry for heroin. I don't get it why Perry, Ohio would be where, you know, the Taliban
Well, it probably comes up to through Cleveland, through Cincinnati, through Indianapolis, Detroit.
Yeah.
It just gets dispersed. I mean,
it just gets dispersed. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, all right. Hey, it's not a big deal. It's kind of just a random question I was asking, but... So that's my, like, current event for the week. It was kind of interesting. People are using Facebook for all kinds of things. And there you go.
I like it.
In your face, right?
No, that was good.
Just joking.
But as far as the Facebook thing goes, I was thinking back. When I first went into rehab and I stopped doing drugs and whatnot, it was MySpace. Yeah. And to be honest with you, you know, the first thing, I know if I remember MySpace, you could post, like, you could really customize your page. Like, you could put pictures and animations.
Backdrops.
Backdrops.
Yeah.
Like, you could do whatever you want.
Anime songs would play as soon as you tap on the...
Yeah, you could do... So, you know, we had that thing. It got a little bit too... It was a very chaotic of an environment, right? There's a lot
of stuff
going on.
People's pages wouldn't even load because of how much stuff was on them. Seriously, take, like, 5 minutes.
It's true. But when I first got it, I remember when I first... got out, I had put a countdown to, a day sober type of thing. And I was always posting things about sobriety, and when I was going to a lot of AA meetings, and just sort of songs that inspired me and things like that, you know. So when I reflect on the article, I mean, I was, and it was just a way for me to, like, people like to put on Facebook, kind of like they like to put a certain image out of themselves, like, ultra wise person always quoting the Buddha,
right.
and
right.
You know, really it's you know, famous people,
mm-hmm.
They want to be portrayed as that. You know, I think people are just trying to create a new identity, and they one way you can really do it quickly is through this sort of secondary personality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you start being real about stuff, you start being honest for the first time, and the best way to get that out to the world is through social media, and then you start getting some positive feedback through likes, through comments, and you're like, oh, okay, this way of being is really, you know, vibing with other people, you know.
So it worked for you in that way that the article describes. There's some truth there.
Yeah, I think it's definitely some truth.
Yeah.
I wonder how they could use that information to use social media in a more beneficial way for people, too. That's a question maybe to ponder for a later time, but...
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah.
I'll ponder that one.
So, my thing I want to talk about this week. Well, first of all, so I just got a new job, and I worked down about... It's a town in the south part of San Francisco on the peninsula. It's right by... I drive by Facebook every day. Ironically, I do. I drive right by the thumbs up thing right there. But it's down... South San Francisco area. And, yeah, so I live in Concord, California, and I have to drive. And it's not just, so it takes me about between 90 minutes and 2 hours to get back and forth. Sometimes a little over 2 hours, sometimes no more, never any less than 90 minutes, though, okay?
Wow.
And it's not just like I'm driving through the country, enjoying my road, the wind flowing through my hair. You know what I mean? That's not happening. It's stop and go traffic. And so I came up to my apartment today, JR was sitting outside, and I told him about the drive, and he said, well, I want you to talk about the traffic situation, because I was just complaining, as I complain every day about the traffic back and forth. When you spend 4 hours of your day in a car driving, it sort of messes with your head a little bit, I think. So
really?
A little bit.
Well, I agree, but in what way do you mean? How's it mess with your...
Well, first of all, I'm not very... Because you need... Let's put it this way. It's hard to pay attention when you're in traffic all the time. So, looking at my phone a lot, I need to start putting the phone away, like changing Pandora stations usually, really that's what I'm doing is changing podcasts, trying to find something interesting to listen to, Audibles, you know, Audible books. Dangerous. I need to stop doing that. Okay, so I'm going to unsolicit advice before that section comes up is I don't text and drive. Don't play with your phone and drive, whether you're in traffic or not. Put it in the glove compartment. You know what I'm saying? If you want to change what you're listening to, stop. Anyway, moving on.
Solid advice.
I don't understand why we can't come up with, first of all, there's 10 million people that live in this area.
Right.
Why don't we have more lanes in the highway? Why do we have that? The other day I was driving the carpool lane, which has a little diamond in it. It's for people with only two or more people in the car can drive in there.
Right.
Completely empty.
Some places it's three or more.
Three or more.
Yeah.
But it's completely empty. There's nobody there. Occasionally you'll see a guy just going about 80 miles an hour, and I'm going about 15. Okay? I don't understand what's the point of the lane to encourage people to carpool?
Yes.
Or just to punish those who just have to drive to work alone?
Well, it's the former, but it just ends up also being the latter.
It didn't work. Nobody researched that before they implemented that rule.
I've heard people argue about this, too. I mean, it kind of logically, I get the purpose of it, that you want to encourage people to get into the same car, so there'll be less cars on the road, and it'll ease congestion more, or reduce pollution more, but it just doesn't end up working that well. I mean, it's crazy when you have complete gridlock, and you can alleviate, you know, that critical mass spot with this other lane that's just sitting there.
I agree.
And that's when it's closed to you. It's open when everything's free-flowing, but, you know, when it's the worst, that's when it's closed.
I fail to believe that there is, I would say out of 10 cars that pass me, I'm going to say on average less than one of those cars is because two people had a conversation, and it went something like this. Hey, let's go to work together today because we can drive in the carpool lane.
Right?
I don't think that ever happened.
That's not the conversation. Well, maybe, but more so it's like you're in the car driving with somebody and they're like, oh, yeah.
I can go in the carpool lane.
Exactly. This is one of the rare opportunities I get to get in the carpool lane.
So we got to do something about that. That's it's a major social issue that needs to be dealt with.
It's so frustrating, man. Being in a car, there's a definition of frustration. Is the blocking of goal-directed behavior. Okay, when you're driving, you have a goal to get somewhere. It's that simple. I'm driving from here to there. And all you get in between here and there, is things stopping you that are literally, by definition, frustrating you. Okay?
Exactly. And I used to think that I was a strong enough person. I'm like, I am above getting upset or agitated in traffic or whatever.
No, you're not.
I'm not, though. I just can't deal with it. Like, I'll be sitting there, and I thought I could do it, first of all. And then, after being in a car for, like, 2 hours, and you're about to get onto the final stretch of highway, you know what I mean? I'm getting onto the final highway, and then all of a sudden, just dead-stop traffic. Like, for some reason, I get this sick pleasure, almost, of when traffic stops in the middle of the highway, a freaking highway, like a six-lane highway, and I'm just sitting there. I can't explain to you what I experience, you know. I just...
What sick is the, pleasure. I like that.
It's like a sick pleasure. Like, I'm on the fucking highway. I'm just going to sit here. I'm like, just fucking great. This is wonderful.
How is that a pleasure?
I don't know. I can't describe
it. But it's kind of good?
It's kind of... I receive pleasure because it's so ass backwards that I'm sitting on the highway just sitting there.
I get that.
And I just kind of sit there just in this acceptance and disbelief of what's happening at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I like to look at the guy behind me's reaction just sitting there. Or when you're sitting in a lane and the other two lanes are just whoosh, flying by. And you're like, oh, I'm going to get over to the other lane. And so you'll put your foot on the pedal and all of a sudden that lane stops.
Right.
Right?
Right. And then your lane goes. The lane you're just in starts moving.
It is. And then this is the other thing. And you're a stand-up comedian. I was thinking about this today. If I ever started doing that, my first joke would be around this issue.
Okay.
So, we all know that in California, motorcyclists are allowed to ride between lanes.
I do know that.
Okay. It's legal.
Yes.
No matter, they can fly by traffic, cut in and out of traffic. It doesn't matter.
Splitting lanes.
Splitting lanes. They can do whatever the hell they want to do. And so...
It's willy-nilly. It's the Wild West for motorcycle riders.
So, the thing that I don't understand is that so these guys will be flying through traffic, and half of them, I don't even see them coming half the time. They just go by. But whoever's in the inside lane, the carpool lane, for example, there's people that I swear to God, I don't know if they just wanted to be, let me just tell you what happens. I'm driving, I see a car, a bike come by me, and then the car in front of me, to the left of the bicyclist, will literally swerve onto the shoulder, almost hitting his car into the median of the highway, in order to somehow get some weird pleasure, because they were so awesome as to clear the lane for the motorcyclist, but the motorcyclist had already passed them, because they didn't see him until they were looking out their damn passenger window, so driving, look out the passenger window, oh, there's a bicycle, violently turn the steering wheel to the left, right, and then go back.
Right.
And so my pleasure, my other sick pleasure is to look and see, I want to see what kind of person actually does that. So I'll drive up and I'll have to look at them and see what person, I don't know why that irritates me so much.
Uh-huh.
It's such a weird thing, but I just don't understand. It's just, I just picture this person just trying to say what an amazing person they are by getting out of the way of this poor motorcyclist.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the motorcyclist too who will do this stuff where they shake their head at you as they drive by because you didn't do something. I just really hate anybody who's going faster than me.
Have you ever...
Did that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, no, for sure. Well, where you ended up was kind of hilarious. So basically, you just hate everybody that's driving faster than you. But no, I mean, yeah, when there's something about that person that's pulling over to the side, they're giving themselves... They want to be so awesome and proud of themselves, and they're patting themselves on the back. Well, they want everybody to see it. That's why it's such an exaggerated... pull over.
Their fantasy is to be an amazing person. My fantasy is I just want to bump one of those bikers like back wheel. I just want to just give them a little
clip.
Just a little taparoo, just so they just start fishtailing a little bit.
They recover.
And then they can recover, and then they're just like, oh, I should be more respectful than everybody else in traffic.
Hey, man.
I'm just trying to teach them a lesson, I think, more than anything else.
It's a difficult thing, you know what I mean? Like, when you have people that put themselves on the road, I've thought about this as stand-up material also. Like, if I went back to stand-up, this is one of the jokes that I would write. It's like, don't put me in a situation where I have to take more care of your life than you are. Okay, if you're driving your motorcycle in the middle of the fucking road and there's cars all over the place and you're going nuts, it's like, I'm a stranger. You don't know me. I could be a crazy fuck and not care about you at all. You know what I mean? Like,
that's true.
If you don't care that much about your life, where you're putting it in everybody else's hands, and they have to be really nice around you and make sure that you don't die, it's like, what a fucking asshole. You know what I mean? And that might not work in the long run, because you might find somebody who doesn't give a shit about your life.
Some people don't care.
Same with cyclists on their bikes and stuff. Like, I know...
By the way, I was hit by a cyclist last week. Another time. Okay.
Another time. You want to bring that up?
Yeah, another time. Okay. Another time.
I get that you want that Lance Armstrong is your hero. And he did it all with one testicle. And that's great. And he looks like a superhero when he puts on spandex. And you want to be in shape too. And your knees suck too much for running. But get over the fucking side of the road on your bicycle, man. Like, you're in danger. You're really in danger. And don't be self-righteous on the road, cyclists. Here's my unsolicited advice. Don't be self-righteous on the road, cyclists. Because you could fucking die. Okay, just be careful with your own life. It's not a matter of fair and not fair, or the fucking environment, and who's wasting gas, and this is wrong, and the whole social justice issues along with it. Just care for your life, okay? Because there's going to be somebody who doesn't, and they're just going to pull into you. And you're not going to be able to walk anymore, or something like that. So, yeah, be careful. And another thing, this critical... and another thing... The critical mass, all right, I got to say this. There's one time I was in downtown San Francisco, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't know what was going on. I was just down there doing something. And all of a sudden, around a corner, this herd of bicyclists just comes around the corner. And all of a sudden, the street is just flooded, like critical mass is supposed to be, with bicyclists, right?
Yeah.
And there's cops over the side, and they're kind of... keeping an eye on it, but they're not really doing anything, and the light's changing from red to green to red to green. All I want to do is walk across the fucking street.
Yeah.
And I'm like, the light changed twice, and it's changed again, and now it's my turn to go. So you know what? I'm fucking going. Like, I don't have time for this shit. You know, so I start going, and, there's this cyclist kind of going, and I'm kind of trying to pace myself.
Slowly.
Yeah.
poke at you slowly, start to go forward.
I'm walking in, and I'm looking at who's coming toward me, and I can kind of pace myself. I can tell they're going this fast, and I need to stop for 1 second, then keep moving, or I walk a little faster and whatever. And basically playing Frogger, you know? But as I'm doing this, this lady's pulling toward me, and she's like, "Get out of the effing way!" And it was like this little lady that under normal circumstances would look really delicate and nice and everything. And I was like, this is a really aggressive situation that I'm involved in here. And that's where I was inspired with the idea that, well, pedestrians are underrepresented. They created critical mass because bicyclists were underrepresented. Well, no, it's the pedestrian who's underrepresented. And the pedestrians need to go out and critical mass the critical massers.
The pedestrians are underrepresented, except for in certain towns, such as Berkeley, California.
Yeah.
Where pedestrians and bicyclists have a power over automobiles.
They do. The walking out right into the street, like that
exactly.
kind of thing?
Yeah, like literally, it'll be like a girl with ponytails skipping across the road. I don't know why this is what I'm imagining. It's just somebody ponytails
you're talking about like an adult with the same type of spirit.
Yes,
as a girl.
Yes.
Yeah, they'll just jump out there the
just
same
jump
way.
Out there and then you'll slam your brakes on. You're you know, they're all relaxed, you're driving, you slam your brake and your car is skidding. You gotta turn the wheel to the right, you twist a little bit, your heart rate's jacked up, you're sweating profusely, you're like, "Oh my god, what's happening?" And their response is, "Dude, watch where you're fucking going."
Yeah,
that's
I'm
what they'll
walking
say.
Here.
They'll cuss it. Yeah, I'm walking here. And I feel like my life is about to end, and they're just...
I almost killed you, man. Like, I don't want to commit manslaughter, you know what I mean? I've seen a person get hit by a car, like, right in front of my face, bad. It was not pretty. And the guy was just walking across the street, not paying attention. Every other day in San Francisco, Muni is hitting somebody. You know what I mean? This happens all the time, and it's...
Yeah.
People just aren't paying attention. They're looking at their phone, or they're just walking out.
I've seen a lot of people just looking at their phones and not even acknowledge that there's cars crossing. Just because there's a crosswalk, it does... You know what? Because there's a guy on his phone driving, and you're on your phone walking.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
And, you know, that's not gonna, it's not going to end way. And, well, and the fact is, too, that, you know, I actually remember talking to a guy. I'm like, why don't the cops ever pull over, like... he was talking about drinking and driving. And he was a motorcyclist, you know. And I was like, weren't you afraid? Because he used to be a heavy drinker. I was like, weren't you afraid of drinking and driving? It seems on your motorcycle, it seems dangerous, you know. He's like, I'd be speeding through and everything like that. I was like, you never got pulled over? And he's like, no. It's like, the reason I didn't get pulled over is because cops realize that I'm putting myself in danger as a drunk bicyclist. Because when I run into a car, it's not going to be the guy in the car that's going to be injured. It's going to be me that's going to be injured.
That's a good point.
And that's what he told me. He's like, you know, it's...
Have fun, buddy.
Yeah.
If you want to go kill yourself. Yeah.
So that was interesting.
That is really interesting.
I feel a little bit better that I got this off my chest because it's just been gnawing at me for a while.
Which part?
Just the whole thing.
The whole thing.
Just the traffic.
Yeah.
The pedestrians.
Mm-hmm.
The bicyclists. The motorcyclists.
It's ugly. You know what, man? I think it's...
The carpool lane.
I think the worst out of all of them really is to be in the car, though. I'm honest with you. Like, I think that experience and adding that into your life just fucks with your... I don't know. It fucks your day. The happiest periods of my life, I didn't have a car and I only used public transportation and walked. Yeah. There's something about that where, like, you get extra time to think or to read. You just have this downtime while you're on your way somewhere and it's so much more, like, stress-free. Whereas when you're in a car, like, even if you're chilling, listening to a podcast and you're doing your thing, you're that one hyper-vigilant part of your brain, you know, the reptilian amygdala part of your brain is just it's just going on high alert. It's always looking, man. You know, it's always...
I agree.
And that puts you on edge. And plus, you're at odds with your fellow man, like, all the time. You know what I mean? It's like, this guy's trying to get in front of me. I got to try to get in. Or that guy cut me off and whatever. It's like, oh, man, move. You gotta move, you know, get through the light or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And you're just always angry at other people and people don't treat you well. Everybody's objectified because you're in your box. You know what I mean? So you're no longer this guy.
Well, you kind of judge people by just the car alone.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
He's driving a pickup truck. That's the kind of guy that's going to swerve away in the for the bicyclists, right?
Right, because he's got a Harley at home.
Yeah, he's got, exactly. You got your, you know, 50-year-old man with his khaki hat and his polo shirt driving his, you know, Porsche convertible.
Right.
Right, or his Corvette.
It's a weekend driver.
Yeah, it's a weekend driver. I mean, we can keep going on with the stereotypes.
Oh, yeah, you just look at it, you see, yeah, absolutely. And it's the worst, oh, man.
The thing is, I drive a Mazda 3, and that's mostly middle-aged women, so I don't know what happens.
It's lesbian, middle-aged lesbian women.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got the hatchback, which is more in the lesbian category.
Exactly.
It's like it's like next to a Subaru.
It is. Subaru. The Subaru, yeah, I know. I need to get rid of that thing.
No, man, it's a great car.
No, I really do. I'm really going to be getting rid of it
really
soon. Yeah.
What are you going to get?
I need something that's more, I don't know. I'm looking at like a Chrysler 300 or whatever those things, right? Like
ballin'.
A big one, like nice smooth ride, comfortable on the inside. Because I'm going to be stuck in that box.
Hey.
I should at least be able to relax and be comfortable and have a smooth ride. I don't want to feel every bump I go over. You know?
That's fair.
I don't want any noise from the. I don't want to hear the traffic noise. I hate that traffic noise, the
good
road
for you,
noise.
Man. Yeah. You know, this is. I like your train of thought here. It's, yeah.
I thought I wanted the fast, speedy car, but. Yeah.
You're not going anywhere. You're in traffic.
Yeah, I'm not even getting that. It's a Mazda 3, for Christ's sake. You know, it's just.
Yeah. Those are quick little cars that they're nimble.
It's very nimble, but you can't be nimble going 5 to 10 miles an hour.
It's difficult. Yeah. It's hard to get the wind going through your hair.
It's challenging. I was going to talk about something important today.
What was that thing? We'll save it for next time.
Okay. So, the talk we were going to have today was going to be around the obesity, diabetes epidemic. And people all, and primarily why the listeners might care is because they're overweight and they want to lose weight. I mean, that's the surface level issue.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't do it. They've tried for years. They tried counting calories. They try exercising more. And so what we're going to talk about next time is going to be the idea of why we get fat.
Okay.
We're going to talk about the hormones that cause us to get fat, what foods make those hormones increase, and why certain foods are bad for you. So primarily what we're going to talk about is the idea that carbohydrates drive insulin, which drives fat. So if you can get your insulin levels under control, you will lose weight and your body will be able to use energy more efficiently.
Dr. Oz talks about stuff like this sometimes, and he is really good about, like, getting people to watch. So some of the things he'll say in, like, an advertisement are like, you know, learn the secret, miracle cure to weight loss. So do you have any of those that you can give us?
Yeah, let me just try. So I'm trying to think how to sensationalize this information.
Yeah.
So, you know, tune in next week. We are going to learn a very little-known secret that I was able to get from a close doctor friend of mine.
Really?
And nobody else knows the information. A few people do. It's going to change your life forever. Wow. It's so easy. It's so easy.
Yes.
It's effortless. And, wow, I can't wait to tell you this information.
I feel skinnier already.
Do you? Yeah. I know. It's going to blow your mind. And I'll have to tell you next week, though.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Go to...
Did I give my unsolicited advice today?
No.
I mean, there was so much of it. Just don't be an asshole on the road
there
if you're riding a bike.
Yeah.
Look before you cross the street. You learn that in Safety Town when you're, like, 6 years old.
Yeah.
My unsolicited advice for the week was... Oh, to your point, was regarding Dr. Oz. It was to stop believing popular health news.
Oh, okay.
Stop reading it and drawing causation from popular health news this week. Right? Stop it. If you're going to do it, look at the research behind it. Just Google. Ryan Wachowski's secret diet helps lose weight. Right? Don't believe it even. Find the research for it.
Right.
And then believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And realize it's not, it's always a very complicated issue.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always work for everybody. You got to do your research. And the other thing was this. Exercise. I haven't been exercising a lot the last 2 weeks. It's been really, really difficult with all the driving I've been doing.
Okay.
So what I've been able to do is squeeze in 2-minute workouts.
Nice.
Literally, I'll just do some push-ups, I'll do some planks, some plank progression, some sit-ups, whatever I got to do. 2 minutes a couple times, like I'll do it, wake up, I might do 2 minutes at the end of my bed, eat breakfast, do 2 minutes before I leave the doorway. I've done like sort of an A-B test. I've noticed how I felt days where I didn't do this exercising at all. and I go through the day, how I was mentally when I got to work. And then I do the 2 to 4 minutes exercise in the morning. And I would say there's a significant noticeable difference from just getting a little bit of movement in.
Interesting, interesting. Okay. Yeah. So, blowing 8-minute abs out of the water. Well, yeah, 2-minute workouts.
2-minute workouts.
Yeah.
That's going to be the next big thing.
All right.
All right, guys. that's my advice for unsolicited advice. Listen next week.
Yeah.
Check out the blog. This will be posted on there. I'm actually going to, I swear, once this commute is down to like an hour each way, I'll be able to write more.
What about this? What about doing voice to text on your phone while you're driving the car for your...
We did talk about doing the road rants.
Yeah. Well, you could just even do it for your blog. Voice to
text. I didn't know. Yeah. I don't know if that's I can do that or not.
I'm sure there's apps on your... On the Googles.
And the interwebs. Yeah, I'll check the Google and ask the Google if I can have permission to do that.
We're going to have a lot of good topics next time, basically, is what Ryan's saying. And we thank you very much for listening today. We have several places where you can contact us. One of them's on Facebook at Unsolicited Advice. That's one, right?
Yes, Unsolicited Advice on Facebook.
There's also the email address, unsolicitedadviceshow@gmail.com.
And thank you for all the emails you guys have been sending. It's been great.
The love is fantastic. A lot of great comments, a lot of good questions, and... almost too many to respond to, but we're trying to respond to everybody. So keep them coming, you guys. If we don't get back to you right away, we will soon.
And we also love regular mail, too. Want to send us fan mail, we'll accept it.
Yeah, so Brian will give you his home address for that, because I'm not.
All right, you guys, thank you for listening.
If you have any fan mail, just go ahead and write it on the back of a $20 bill and send it on over to my house. Yeah, that
works. Oh, now you're going to give out your address.
Yeah. All right, guys, have a great week.